Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, Turnbuckle Turmoil fans, welcome to the show here on another Sunday afternoon. Sign Guy and QT with you as usual here. And we want to remind you real fast before we jump into it, if you're looking for some wrestling today, Without a Cause is running one of their Without a Crowd live streams featuring the debut of the Jim Nasty Boys today and the debut there of Rebel Kell out of the Buddy Wayne Academy. So make sure you tune in and watch what they are presenting. Support your local independent pro wrestling if you have some available to you and near you. But without further ado, I want to welcome our guest on to the show today. He is a very long-time wrestling fan, and he is a noted author, having just released the book, Lance by Chance, Wrestling as a Von Erich. He is Vincent Berry, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you very much for having me on.
Well, since it's your first time with us, we're going to start you out today with our traditional first-timers question. Might be
okay.
A little bit different in your situation, but I think it still applies. What got you into the world of professional wrestling?
Well, I grew up in outside of Dallas. I grew up in Louisville, Texas, and at that time in the early 80s, the world-class promotion was really just getting hot. It was about, I don't know, maybe 82 when I discovered it. I was probably about 13 or 14 years old, and I discovered professional wrestling. And also, too, you know, the Von Erichs lived about 10 miles from, you know, their hometown was about 10 miles from my hometown. So that made it extra special that they were, you know, local wrestlers. And, I just fell in love with the wrestling product that the world class was putting on back then. You had the Freebird feud, the Von Erich and the Freebird feud. And you had guys like Iceman King Parsons and Kabuki, King Kong Bundy, Devastation Incorporated, Jimmy Garvin, and, you know, it was just an exciting time.
The world-class territory is interesting because we've seen several documentaries made on it over the years. It's no secret that a lot of the performers there had problems out of the ring. We lost several members of the world class roster by the time that the mid 90s hit. When you look back at world class, obviously fans loved it at the time. It was one of the most successful promotions as far as television ratings and attendance that we had. But looking back in your 2020 vision at the legacy of world class, what do you think the ultimate legacy is going to be?
Well, it's sad. It's one of tragedy, no doubt. You know, when you look at a family that had three suicides committed in it, and you had Gino Hernandez overdose from cocaine, and eventually, you know, Bruiser Brody was stabbed, and Chris Adams was shot, and, you know, it's very sad. And all that is really covered in the book, you know. I just want to, you know, let listeners know that, you know, yes, it is a book about Lance, and Lance tells the story from his perspective in this book, but, you know, David Von Erich's death is, or, you know, his death and the tragedy of that was covered in this book. You know, the world title that Kerry won is covered in this book. You know, Gino's death and the tour to Israel and you know, some incidences that happened with Chris Adams. So, you know, yes, this book is about Lance, but, you know, it is about the rise and fall of world class, and it does cover those tragedies. You know, it talks about in detail, you know, there's a chapter in here called Mike Von Erich, and he talks about the day he went to Mike's funeral and what happened there and what was expected of him and, you know, just what kind of a position that put him in. So, yeah, when you ask me about the legacy of the promotion, it's one of tragedy.
One of the more fondly remembered aspects of World Class by the fans that were lucky enough to go there is basically their home arena, the Sportatorium in Dallas. It became almost as mythical as the Von Erichs themselves and Gino Hernandez and Chris Adams and the Freebirds. The Sportatorium was just this mythical place for a lot of the wrestling fans around the country that could watch on ESPN or TBN and see the Sportatorium. For people like yourself that grew up in world-class territory, and the Sportatorium is something you could actually go to and watch the wrestling in person there in the building. What was the Sportatorium like as a wrestling fan?
You know what? I had the opportunity to go there a few times. I didn't get to go to the Sportatorium as many times. At that time, I was saving my money to go to the big ones, like all the ones at Reunion Arena and stuff. Plus, I worked on Friday night, and it was hard to get off work. But I've been down there a few times, and what I liked about the Sportatorium was you could walk anywhere in that building and stand in any one of those seats and see the ring, and where you'd like, you know, unless there was some kind of a pole or a barrier right in front of you, you had a good seat. You know what I'm saying? There was not a bad seat in the house. It was kind of like an octagon. So the ring was down there in the middle. And, I mean, I thought it was special. You know, when I went there the few times that I did, I thought it was special, you know, because of the people who had been through there, you know. But it was an old building, you know, and it was, you know, but it did, you know, some of the best wrestlers in the world wrestled there, you know. So there was this, I don't know, like a mystique to it, you know.
Well, like we have been saying, you, along with Lance Von Erich, wrote the book Lance by Chance, Wrestling as a Von Erich. How did you come to be the person that hooked up with Lance in order to write his life story?
Well, about 3 years ago, I started a website called Wrestleville.com. And, you know, previous to that, I was covering a lot of boxing and MMA here in South Texas and basically all over the state. And we would just, me and my friends had websites and would cover, you know, both sports. And when that kind of came to an end and stopped, I missed writing. And so I started my own website. I was going to start writing about wrestlers. So I started Wrestleville.com. And, you know, I have some people on the website. You know, I interviewed Harley Race and Larry Henning, and I've wrestled or interviewed Tracy Smothers and Bill Dundee and guys like that. And friend of mine, James Beard, he's a referee and a booker now. And he, SWE Fury Wrestling, based out of North Texas. And I was talking to him, and, you know, in a couple of our conversations, Lance kept on coming up, and I just always thought, you know, I said, what an interesting story that would be, because of how he came in, and, you know, they said he was a Von Erich, and then they came on TV and said he wasn't a Von Erich, and then he kind of disappeared, and, you know, where, what he'd do, and, you know, just all these things. And eventually, in one of those conversations, he told me how to get in touch with him. So I reached out to Lance, and he gave me his phone number, and within a couple of days we were talking, and I told him what I wanted to do, and I wanted to write like an article about him on my website. But once I started getting to know more about him and talking to him, I was just really fascinated with what did come out, because there's a lot of misconceptions of, you know, what people think what happened and who he is and what he did. And a lot of people don't know he wrestled for 10 years. And a lot of people don't know he became a star overseas. And a lot of people don't really know the ins and outs, so that he was trained by Fritz and sent up to Portland and stuff like this, discovered by World Class, you know? So, you know, when I was finding out all this stuff and he was telling me all these stories, and I was just like, I said, look, man, you know, after the article, I was like, you just got so much, there's just so much here, you know, that I can't fit in a, you know, a 1,200 page article, you know, or whatever it was. And I said, you know, have you ever thought about writing a book? And he goes, well, I've never thought about doing one, but, you know, I've been asked. And I said, well, if you ever consider
Looks like you dropped the call, QT. Hopefully he'll call right back.
Oh, okay. Hopefully so, yeah.
Go ahead and hum the national anthem if you would like, QT, while we wait.
I can't really hum the national anthem because earlier this morning while eating some over hard eggs, I bit my tongue. I did.
Oh, no.
I even had pieces. Yes.
Did you have to get stitches?
No stitches this time. But I was thinking about putting alum on it. Alum.
Aloe vera?
Alum. A-L-U-M. It's not on the periodic chart, though, so I can see your confusion. Oh, okay. Is there any chance, can we give Mr. Barry a call?
Well, I'm waiting to see if he'll call us right back. We'll give him just another minute or two, and then we'll attempt to do that.
Well,
now, QT, if you can't hum the national anthem, can you recite perhaps the national anthem as it was originally meant to be as a poem?
Well, no, but I will give our fans an update on the mile run. Mile run is still held by Hikmon El Garouche of Morocco, and his time of 3:43 has now stood for over 20 years. 3:43. Yes.
Well, that's not bad.
And I believe he also still holds the 1,500-meter record en route to that mile run. I think the 1,500-meter record is 3:35.
All right. Well, it looks like we have Vincent Barry back. So you were telling us when we lost you about Lance said he hadn't really thought about writing a book but had been asked.
Yeah, and so when I started talking to him about it, he was he just said, yeah, write the book, you know. And, you know, there's been many times that we've had these conversations, me and him, like, I say, man, I can't believe you wrote the book with me, and I can't believe that you wanted to do this. And he goes, yeah, me neither, you know. And someone asked him the other day, he said, well, why did you say yes to Vinny? And he goes, I don't know. I don't know why I said yes, but there was just something different about me that he, you know, I guess he felt comfortable. And if you read the book, he gets pretty honest in the book. You know, he got, you know, as being as private as he is, and I would say he's a pretty private guy, and he'll even say the same thing. He opened up in that book. I mean, he got vulnerable in that book, and you know, well, you read it, Jason. So, I mean, I'm sure you could attest that he got honest in the book.
Absolutely. He definitely was. Now, as you know, we're up here in the Pacific Northwest, QT and myself, and of course, Lance Von Erich, before he was Lance Von Erich, spent a great deal of time in the Portland territory. That's where he started his wrestling career. He was sent here by World Class to start his career and get started. Portland is something that was covered quite a bit. Obviously, you had access to Lance. Did you do a lot of research as far as reaching out to other people that were in the Portland territory, or did you watch a lot of the old Portland footage? How did you get the Portland aspect of the story together?
Well, of course, I talked to Lance extensively. I've reached out to Jerry Gray a little bit. Of course, Jerry Gray isn't feeling well these days, and so he was a little limited, but, you know, he was pretty good about answering some questions when I needed something from him. I also spoke to Steve Simpson, and Steve Simpson helped me as well. So those were my sources in Portland. Of course, yeah, I did watch a lot of, do a lot of research as far as watching videos and kind of putting timelines together and stuff like that.
In reading the book, I was a little bit surprised at Lance's introduction to a lot of the people in the Portland territory. It was definitely not how you would expect to meet a lot of your coworkers. Not to give away everything in the book, I'm sure people will look forward to reading that story when they pick up a copy. But when you heard a story like that and a couple of similar stories that popped up in different parts of the book, were you surprised at some of the things that went on in the wrestling world, or did you go into the book sort of expecting that type of behavior?
You know, that's a good question. And, I guess I kind of did, throughout my years, I'm not a young kid, right? You know, I'm 52. So, I've been around a little bit. And, so I've heard stories and I had an idea, but hear the stories from him and then write about it and try to, kind of paint the picture, so to speak. I would say that I was surprised. And then also too, what was ironic about what you're talking about, the way that Lance met the guys in the Portland territory. If you remember, he was so appalled by that, right, that he had to leave. And then a couple years later, he found himself doing the same thing. So
I did see the irony in that, yeah. He went from total shock and amazement to not really having a problem with it himself.
Right. And that's kind of what, there's a like a common theme in this, in the book as well, it shows the hard lifestyle that these guys lived, and it shows some of the bad decisions that these guys made, and it showed, the damage that these guys took on their body and what they had to do to perform every day, drugs and alcohol played a part of that, risky behavior played a part of that, even at the end of the book, he says, wow, I'm still around, and there's a lot of guys I work with that aren't, and he even lists them, and a lot of those guys died, before they were 55 years old. And so, I think people are going to be really surprised, somebody told me the other day, they go, wow, I thought I was reading a book about Lance, and I read the Rise and Fall of World Class. And also, too, you'll read in there, too, that the book is about, you know, how wrestling was run back then, you know, and how the territories worked back then, and how the NWA title worked. And, you know, I think fans will find it really interesting about how the story was told all the way.
One of the people that contributed to the book and the person that first connected me to you so we could get you on this very program right now is Ken Hamlin out of Tacoma. He worked for the Portland territory for many years in the 80s and still continues to work on the local independent scene up here in the Northwest to this day. He had a photograph or possibly multiple photographs that were included in the book. How did you first meet up with Ken Hamlin and enlist his help for this project?
Yeah, that is a very interesting question. You know, I like Ken a lot, and I've never met him in person, but he was a big help on this book, and I just have a lot of respect for him, the way he did business, and so I was looking for some pictures for the book. It came time I was trying to find some people who, you know, had access to the photos that I needed. And I ended up putting like a post in one. I came across like it was either a Facebook page or a group, something about Portland memorabilia or Portland wrestling memorabilia or something. And I said, I just put a post in there one day, looking for somebody that can help me with some wrestling pictures from the 1980s of the Portland territory. And he messaged me back. He says, you know, what are you looking for? Or something to that effect, or I might be able to help you and get back with me. And so I did. And man, I tell you, he was like, what are you looking for? I said, well, I need this, 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 and this. And he goes, okay, yeah, I can help you with these photos. And then, I mean, within about, I think, 2 weeks, he got me everything I needed. And, you know, I'd been waiting for pictures. You know, someone was dragging their feet for 6 months, you know, where I was like, hey, were you able to get those pictures for me yet? And they're like, you know, acting like I was bugging them. I was like, golly, man, you know, I've been waiting 6 months, you know. And I reached out to Ken, and, you know, I mean, as soon as we started communicating with each other, he was, you know, taking action and getting me what I need. And, yeah, that's how I met him. And he was vital because he got, you know, he had pictures of Jerry Gray and Sandy Barr, guys that were instrumental in teaching Lance up there. And he got me a picture of Ric Flair and some early pictures when Lance was wrestling as Ricky Vaughn. So yeah, it was a big help.
Now, of course, the Lance Von Erich story, like you said, it's more than just Lance's story, but it's his autobiography. Did you do any type of market research as far as determining how best to sell the book or the demographics that you would market towards, anything of that nature, or did you just want to get the story out there in general and let the fans kind of gravitate towards it from there?
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, there was some thought, you know, of that, you know, doing, but, you know, this being my first book, there's a lot of stuff you kind of learn trial by fire. And I've definitely been doing a little more of that than I wanted to. But I've had some writing friends that, you know, people who have done some books. You know, I worked very closely with Kenny Casanova. He's been helping me quite a bit. There's a gentleman down here who did the picture layout for me. He's written several books about the travel of Mexico. His name's Mexico Mike, and he spent a lot of time with me and teaching me how to market. And, you know, the way I went about it is, you know, reaching out to a lot of podcasts and a lot of wrestling outlets, and a lot of even those outlets reached out to me when they saw the book was coming out. And so, you know, we're getting the word out by that way. You know, of course, with COVID and everything, you know, the virtual tour is probably the most ideal. You know, this is really ideal to do some phone interviews and, you know, to use social media and, you know, because events right now are limited, you know, and scarce. So, you know, that's how I've been doing it. You know, there's a lot of people helping me promote the book. But as far as research and, you know, I kind of felt like, you know, you got Texas, you got the Portland area. There's a lot of people that remember him from there, and there's a lot of people that just know the story, right? And so I would say it's a little harder sell in Texas than I thought it was going to be. You know, I thought, wow, you know, people are going to see the book and you know that he wrestled in world class. But, you know, you got to remember, you know, a lot of people really don't look at Lance favorable. A lot of the diehard Von Erich fans don't look at Lance very favorable because, you know, I don't know if they feel like Lance betrayed the Von Erichs or what have you, you know, but, you know, there was a bit of a falling out, you know, and he basically went AWOL and didn't return, you know, to his job. So, you know, Fritz went on TV and basically broke kayfabe, and, you know, a lot of fans just kind of turned against him. You know, he talks about in the book, from one day to the next, you know, I was loved and I wasn't, you know. And so, you know, a lot of people see the book and they go, oh, it's about Lance. I don't want to read the book. Would you say, Jason, that the book is just about Lance? I mean, give me your honest opinion.
It, of course, features heavily on Lance, but there was a lot more than that. I thought the Portland territory was featured a lot more than I expected going into it. Obviously, there's a lot of the inner workings of world class and a lot of the turmoil that they had. A lot of information about the international wrestling scene, particularly South Africa. So there was a lot more than just specifically Lance.
Yeah, and I think that's what makes the book interesting, that there's about 25 chapters in there, and there's almost like 8 chapters on each, you know. I think there's almost 8 chapters on Portland. There might be 8 chapters on world class, and there might be 8 international chapters on there close to it. And so, you know, it's definitely a mix of stories, and that was the thing I liked, you know, because this wasn't the book I was going to write. I mean, I was kind of really had a different vision for it, but, you know, after we started talking about, and, you know, you can't, like, it's hard to write a book about Lance and bypass everything that happened when he was there. You know, I don't think I'd be doing the story justice if we didn't mention, you know, what happened to Gino Hernandez, you know, and that's why there is a chapter in there called Gino Hernandez. You know, Mike committed suicide, and, you know, that's why there's, you know, chapter on Mike Von Erich, you know, it was a big part there, you know. He, you know, there's a chapter on there, Kerry Von Erich. There's a chapter, you know, it's called Japan and Friends, but could call it Bruiser Brody if you wanted to. And so, you know, the book is also about a lot of people who influenced him and participated in his life back then, you know. And I think for people who loved the wrestlers of that time, I really think they're going to enjoy this book because it's going to take you into those personal relationships, you know, and what he experienced with these guys and, you know, what they taught him and, you know, some of the things they told him, you know.
You mentioned a couple of moments ago about how Fritz Von Erich went on television and sort of renounced the relationship with Lance. He publicly stated that Lance was not an actual Von Erich and they had created him so they could have another Von Erich on the show. The interesting part to me on that, and I don't know if it ever connected with me before reading the book, but it definitely did once I read the book. They referred to him as William Vaughn, which was not his actual name, and it was a name I didn't see used anywhere else in the book. Do you happen to know why they would refer to him as William?
Yeah, that, you know what? That's very interesting. And, you know, I got that quote that I shared that quote off the television show where Fritz made that announcement, and I left it the way that he said it. I believe William is part of his name. I don't know if that's his middle name. His real name is Kevin Vaughn. His real name is Kevin Vaughn. And when he went to Portland, Don Owens called him Ricky Vaughn. And when he came to Dallas, they called him Lance Von Erich. And then when Fritz denounced him, for whatever reason, he used the name William. I don't know why he did that, but I didn't want to change it. I didn't want to change what was on the show. To reflect, I thought it might be confusing, but I wanted to leave it, you know, the way that Fritz said it. So I really don't have the answer. I think that might be his middle name, but I do know his name is Kevin Vaughn, and he never liked the name Kevin. And then after being called Lance Von Erich for so many years, you know, the first name Lance stuck, so he kept it. So that's why he goes by Lance Von today.
Well, I'll be the first to say that I was confused, but not because of your writing or anything. It was just a little confusing to me as why they would refer to him as that, unless that was the name he potentially gave them to call him when they were not in front of the fans, maybe.
Yeah, no, that's a good thing to ask about. But yeah, that was the only reason why I didn't change it, you know, because I didn't feel comfortable changing what Fritz said, you know, on the actual television show. So
a big part of the book covered Lance's post-world-class career, which was largely international, specifically in South Africa. He wrestled quite a bit in South Africa. And I know in the United States, in that particular area, there wasn't a lot of information coming in about the South African wrestling scene. We didn't hear about it a lot. In this country, I don't know that there's a ton of footage available. What was the preparation and the homework that you had to do in order to write the South African wrestling scene chapters?
Well, I spent a lot of time talking to, because they're, I'll be honest with you, too. There is very little. I mean, I could find very little matches on the internet about that error. But I spent a lot of time talking to Dusty Wolf and Lance and Jeff Bearden. Jeff Bearden produced a lot of he kept a lot of like newspaper clippings from that error, and a lot of you know, those three gentlemen shared a lot of information. Steve Simpson gave me a lot of information on South Africa as well. I had a couple brief conversations with him, and, you know, he was able to fill me in on kind of you know, how things worked down there and what was going on down there. And, you know, so, yeah, that was I spent, a lot of time talking to Dusty and Jeff Bearden. They were with him during that time. Of course, Jeff Bearden wrestled as the Giant Warrior, and I have a couple pictures of him in the book. You know, the way they described South Africa was a wild scene. You know, there was, you know, very, well, you know, the Giant Warrior says, you know, that he was, you know, what, he wrestled there 15 times, and almost every single one of those times he was escorted out of the building because of the, you know, because of the heat that he drew from the crowds. And there's a very popular wrestler over there named Gama Singh, who they had wrestled. Lance wrestled Gama Singh in a babyface versus babyface match probably about 10 times. And, you know, Lance was loved over there. He was a babyface. And there, him and Gama Singh always wrestled to like a time limit draw or something like that. And Lance never experienced any, heat from the fans. But Jeff Bearden, the Giant Warrior, however, did. And he wrestled Gama Singh as a heel, you know, that the Ultimate Warrior was a heel, or not, I'm sorry, the Giant Warrior, Jeff Bearden, was the heel. And, you know, he fought with Gama Singh quite a bit. And can I share something out of the book?
Absolutely.
All right, and this is this is what happened. Jeff Bearden kind of ambushed Gama Singh Gama Singh had a match, and after the match, the Giant Warrior went into the ring and grabbed the microphone and kind of challenged him and wanted to fight him then and there. And so Gama Singh just said, "Look, I can't do it right now. I just got done wrestling." You know, and just kind of walked away. And as in walking away, this is what happened. When Gama turned away to leave the ring, Jeff attacked him with a running knee into his back. Almost instantly, the fans around the ring started throwing their chairs at Jeff. Before long, a large pile had accumulated inside the ring. To keep himself from being hit by more of the flying chairs, Jeff hid underneath the growing pile. I'm sure his sense of security came to a screeching halt when the smell of smoke filled the air. I suspect an angry fan had attempted to set the ring on fire, and adding to all the chaos, gunshots could be heard throughout the building. No one knew if the guns were being fired by the event-goers or the police. The wrestling event turned into a full-scale riot. People were running in all directions in search of the exits. Suddenly, the lights went off in the building, and the roar of the crowd grew louder. The entire scene got out of hand quickly. Eventually, the sound of barking dogs were heard as the riot squad entered. Jeff was still hiding under the pile of chairs in the middle of the ring when someone assisted unburying him. One by one, the chairs lifted off Jeff, and he thought the help was coming from one of the event employees, but he wasn't that lucky. Unfortunately, it was a begrudging spectator who had a knife and stuck it right into Jeff's chest. I have never witnessed anything like that. Jeff's stab wound was not fatal, but it had the knife entered his body sideways and not up and down, the blade bare. It would have been, and the blade barely missed his heart. Jeff had been stabbed a total of 5 times in his career. In the 15 matches he had in Durban, 11 of those times he needed to be escorted out of the arena by the police. He definitely was a wrestler that the fans didn't care for, and I'm sure he felt their disapproval every time he worked there. In wrestling, being able to infuriate the fans is called getting heat. A good heel wrestler who could piss people off easily usually became successful. Gino Hernandez, Chris Adams, the Freebirds were also good examples of wrestlers who could get heat. In Durban, it was Jeff, and we all had to be ready for anything. I thought the shows we put on there were dangerously exciting. And that's an excerpt from chapter 20 of the book. And so that just paints a picture of kind of what things happened down there. And I went to a lot of shows in Dallas, and I never saw that. Anything close to that.
Definitely glad that the Giant Warrior is still with us and wasn't more serious. But, yeah, very scary when fans attack for sure. And at this point in time, my co-host QT Vokes is standing by. I know he has questions, so I'm going to pass things over to him for a bit.
Okay.
Well, thank you, Sign Guy. Hello, Mr. Barry.
Hello.
Mr. Barry, when you were living with Steve Simpson on 82nd Avenue, you mentioned that you often ate at Kip's Big Boy. Do you know if the restaurant is still there?
I don't know if it's still there.
Oh, okay. All right. You also mentioned on page 57 of your book that you were not a big fan of the wrestler known as Mega Maharishi. I have the feeling he was Ed Wiskowski, who was close to Playboy Buddy Rose.
Well, you got to remember, QT, this book is told by Lance's perspective. So it was Lance who wasn't a big fan of Mega Maharishi.
Oh, okay. Can you tell us why he may not have been a big fan of Mega Maharishi?
He didn't like his wrestling style, and he didn't like the wrestling style of Nagasaki. So, you know, those two wrestlers, and they often wrestled in tag teams together. So, you know, Lance in the book, wrestling both those guys on the same night was made for a long night because Kendo Nagasaki was really stiff. To the point where, you know, you could hurt guys, you know, that when you went in there, Lance didn't like wrestling him because he felt everything that guy did to him, right? Mega Maharishi, on the other hand, didn't, you know, he would, you know, if he was trying to keep up, if Lance just got done wrestling, a round or so with Nagasaki, and then he tagged out the Mega Maharishi, and Lance is trying to keep up to the style of Nagasaki, and then when Maharishi gets in there, Maharishi is like complaining to Lance that, oh, you're being too stiff and you're hurting me, and and it was like the contrast between the two was just so extreme. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying, yes. Stiff wrestlers, kind of like the Iron Sheik. He was known to be stiff.
Right, right. So one was really stiff and one wasn't stiff at all.
Oh, okay.
So.
All right. Well, Mr. Barry, a seminal moment in Portland wrestling history happened when Playboy Buddy Rose was threatening a fan who was at ringside. And this ringside fan was known as Granny. And she was there every week, and Buddy Rose was threatening her by shaking his fist at her. And Granny stood up and shook her umbrella at him, and Buddy Rose went and hid behind Sandy Barr and implored Sandy Barr for help. My question is, do you remember Granny, and did you have any run-ins with Granny?
I've never been up to the Portland promotion.
Oh, okay. Oh, all right. Have you yourself ever had a old grandfather or grandmother like when you're taking umbrella at you?
I think everybody's had that grandmother a time or two, right?
Oh, I think so, yes. They may have woken up on the wrong side of the comforter. Yes. Oh, okay. All right. Well, Mr. Barry, I also read your book and enjoyed it, and I particularly liked page 73 and 74. You said you were driving from Portland to Eugene when you encountered a man who threw rocks at your vehicle, and he even had a crossbow. Can you tell our Turnbuckle Turmoil listeners about this 1980s road rage incident?
Sure. And that was something that happened to Lance and the guys that were driving. You got to remember too, QT, I wasn't there on that trip, you know. I wrote this book from Lance's perspective, but yeah, I will definitely, and if you don't mind, I'll go ahead and read that if you would like, if that's okay.
Ooh, that would be very good, very good.
Okay, so on this particular trip, I was driving and Steve Simpson was riding next to me in the front. We were sharing small talk when I noticed a pickup truck was tailgating us. The vehicle looked like a brown late model Ford from the 70s. The truck was driving so close, if I braked suddenly, it would slam right into the back of us with great force. I decided to slow down so the driver could pass me. I tried doing this several times before I realized he was up to more than just wanting to get around us. "What's happening?" Steve questioned. "Some asshole's tailgating us," I explained. "Pull over to the side to see if he passes us," he suggested. "I've already tried that a couple times now. He's being an ass," I blurted. The motorist stayed behind us, and even when I tried to let him go by for what seemed like several minutes, the person in the pickup truck continued to taunt us. I could feel my anger rise. Eventually, the truck pulled alongside of us. I was pissed off, and at the same time, I was trying to get his attention. The driver maintained the same rate of speed we were going, and he refused to pass us. I got a clear view of him in the adjacent lane. He looked to be in his 50s, and he was bald on top of his head, but he had long brown stringy hair on the back and the sides of it. The guy was also wearing glasses. All of a sudden, I noticed his arm come out of the driver's window, and he started throwing rocks at us. When they hit my van, I lost my temper. I started honking my horn and swerving into his lane. "Pull over, asshole. This isn't funny," I shouted. "I think the guy is crazy, Ricky," Steve stated. "He's about to find out how crazy I am," I exclaimed. "Run his ass off the road," Bobby yelled. Within moments, the truck submitted to my request and proceeded to pull over to the side of the road. I followed behind him and stopped and put the van in the park. Steve and I immediately jumped out of the vehicle and we started to walk toward his truck. Instead of stopping his vehicle, the man continued to slowly move forward, creating distance between us and his truck. I guess when we believed he was far enough from us, he parked. While watching and trying to figure out what he was doing, I started running on the shoulder of the highway. I was furious, and I could only think about kicking the driver's ass. I hadn't gotten very far when Steve commanded me to stop further on the side of the highway. And since I didn't have my glasses on, I couldn't see what Steve saw, but I listened and stopped. The driver had a crossbow pointed at us. Steve and I were in shock. The crossbow was the only thing I could think about now. I realized that I was dealing with a real nut job. "We need to get back in the van, Ricky," Steve insisted. "This guy's psycho," I cautioned. "I think so. Don't take your eyes off him," Steve suggested. "Let's get out of here." And so that was one of the road stories that happened in Portland, and they gave me, I got quite a bit of those. And so I decided to put all the road stories in one book or in one chapter, you know? And so that was how that came about.
Well, there seems to be quite a few more road rage incidents these days than back in the 80s. Yes. Sadly, I don't know why. Okay. Boy, that's something. All right. Well, Mr. Barry, the subject of golfing came up quite a bit in your book. Back in 1983 or 85 or around there, how well could you have done on the golf course with today's graphite shaft drivers with the special bubble heads?
I don't know. My golf is not that good.
Okay. Well, now you were a very well-built young man back then in the early 80s. If Tiger Woods could have time-traveled...
I want to let you know, you're talking to Vinny, the author of the book. Lance is
I
wrote about.
Yes.
And so I wasn't built. Lance was built. We're talking about...
Oh, okay.
I want to clarify that to you and the listeners.
Oh, okay. Well, in your opinion, back in the 80s, could Lance, with his well-built body, outdrive Tiger Woods had he had the right equipment?
Yeah, well, Lance is not a big golfer, and Lance only would golf when, like when certain family members were around or something like that. Lance wasn't into golfing, never really liked it. Ironically, he lives next to a golf course now, and I don't know if he's ever been on it.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, in the book, Lance mentioned that the apartment he had with Steve may not have had that much art on the walls or paintings. Since then, do you know if Lance has come into any Vincent van Goghs or Monets?
No, I would not know that.
Okay. All right. Do you yourself collect any Monets or Van Goghs?
I don't collect Monets, but actually in an art class I had about 15 years ago, I painted a replica of a Monet, a couple. So.
Oh, okay. Very nice. All right. Okay. Wow, okay. Well, now, do you know if Lance ever ran into the kangaroos in the Portland area, Lord Jonathan Boyd and Sir Charles, and if he ever got hit with a boomerang?
No, I think those guys were before his time. They were up there before he was, so I don't think he there was no stories of him and Jonathan Boyd.
Oh, okay. Do you know if Lance ever ran into a Portland wrestler named Haru Sasaki, a Wiley ring veteran?
That name does not sound familiar to me. His name never came up in our stories, in our conversations.
No Haru Sasaki. Okay. All right. Well, now he started, just for the record, he started wrestling in Portland during the mid to late 60s, that's when he got his start. And World War II was still fresh in the mind of many middle-aged fans of Portland wrestling. So he drew a hell of a lot of heat. Haru Sasaki.
Yeah, I bet.
Oh, okay. Did you ever have a chance to meet Northwest wrestler Dutch Savage?
No, I have not.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Mr. Berry, do you play a musical instrument?
I do not.
Okay. Did you ever have a chance to run into an accomplished bagpipe player, Roddy Piper?
No. I never had the chance to meet Mr. Piper.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, now, what do you think about today's entrance music? Back in the 80s, entrance music was pretty much non-existent.
Yeah,
music.
Yeah, and when I was watching the World Class wrestling, I think that's they started doing that, but it wasn't, pre-80s. Yeah, you didn't see a lot of that. You didn't see it, in the 70s a lot. But yeah, and I think World Class likes to toot their own horn of doing it. And of course, now today everybody does it, right? So, I think it adds to the definitely adds to the product, of wrestling. So, I think it's a good thing that they do.
Well, okay. Guys, we are down to the last few minutes today, and Vinny, if there's anything that you would like to say to our listeners, plug and promote anything and everything, how to get the book, any social medias, any upcoming interviews you have going on, go ahead and plug away.
Okay, well, we've got an interview coming out with Slam Wrestling within the next week or so. Slam Wrestling's going to do a write-up on us, so we're looking forward to that. There's a TV station down here in South Texas, KRGV Channel 5. They're going to do a story this week, and you can see that story online. It'll be about a local author, which is me, who's writing this book, and so they're doing a feature on us. The King of Wrestling is going to be doing one more podcast on us. It'll probably be in about a week or so, and I'm going to be on Rock and Roll James television show this week, which is on YouTube. So we've got some things going this week. You can order the book on lancebychance.com. That is lancebychance.com. You can order the book there, and also I have another wrestling website called wrestleville.com where there are stories on there, and you can see what we do on that website. And there is also a Lance Von Erich Facebook page, group page. So, but if you want the book and you want it before Christmas, please put your order in now, and I can ship them out to you as soon as possible, and you can get the book at lancebychance.com. And I think readers are really going to enjoy the fact that, you know, it does cover, you know, a good section of Portland, Dallas, and the international scene, and it talks a lot about, there's a lot of wrestlers in there that I think they're going to remember and know that were warm to their hearts. So I think it's going to be a good read for them.
Well, Vinny, we want to thank you very, very much for being on Turnbuckle Turmoil with us today. We absolutely enjoyed having you. I enjoyed the book immensely. I think other fans of not only Lance Von Erich, or if you're up here, Ricky Vaughn, but fans of the Portland wrestling from the 80s, world-class wrestling, just pro wrestling in general, I think they'll get a lot of enjoyment and a lot of use out of it. So hopefully more and more and more people will be picking up the book, endorsed by Jerry Gray, so that's a good endorsement to pick up, and I wish you the best of success with it.
Well, gentlemen, thank you very much for having me on your show, and I really do appreciate the time that you gave me today.
Absolutely. Fans, please pick up a copy of this great book, Lance by Chance, Wrestling as a Von Erich. It is written, of course, by Vinny Barry, along with Lance Von Erich himself. So, great tale about wrestling and, of course, Lance in particular. Now, as we end the show, we want to make mention, of course, of a huge loss in the wrestling world this last week. As most fans are probably aware, we lost the great Pat Patterson. Pat Patterson, one of the best in-ring performers of all time, up in our neck of the woods. He was Pacific Northwest heavyweight champion. He, of course, went on to form one of the greatest tag teams of all time with Crippler Ray Stevens. He also was the first ever intercontinental heavyweight champion at the WWF. He was the in-ring referee for the main event of WrestleMania. He was also the inventor of the Royal Rumble match. He did probably more business than most people will ever fully realize. It's a great loss to pro wrestling. We're going to miss Pat Patterson. So as we end the show today, we're going to hit our traditional 10-bell salute in honor of him.